mine. You bet I'd move it farther, a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Bill Boyarsky, a political correspondent for Truthdig and a lecturer in journalism at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication. Bill Boyarsky was city editor of the Los Angeles Times when he retired in 2001 and was a member of the reporting teams that won three Pulitzer Prizes. In 2010, the Los Angeles Press Club honored Boyarsky's original columns by Truthdig by naming him the Online Journalist of the Year. He's the author of The Rise of Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan, His Life and Rise to the Presidency, Los Angeles, City of Dreams, and Backroom Politics, co-authored with his wife, Nancy. His latest book is Inventing L.A., The Chandlers and Their Times. A columnist for the Jewish Journal, Bill Boyarsky blogs for L.A. Observed. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Boyarsky.
Thank you for having me.
And clearly, there's been a lot of coverage lately of what's going on in the Sheriff's Department pick downtown at the L.A. County Jail. But frankly, Bill, this has been going on for decades. It's the worst-kept secret that the L.A. Sheriffs get their initial training in the jail before they're even allowed to patrol the streets. And brutality has been rampant forever.
Well, you're right. In 1999, two reporters, Tina Daunt and Anne-Marie O'Connor, uncovered and wrote in a long story how the Sheriff's Department in certain stations and in the jail were emulating the behavior of gangs, you know, with names and tattoos and the whole set of behavior. They were gangs themselves, including brutal behavior toward prisoners in that jail. And the same people who were in charge at that time, including as they wrote, the undersheriff Paul Tanaka, who's now the person who's actually running the department under Sheriff Baca, we're all members of these gangs.
So what explains Baca's truculence and obstructiveness? The FBI have been involved in this. There's ample evidence. Now, maybe they should put cameras in there and do what's being talked about. But as I say, this has been going on for decades. I don't understand what it is that makes him tick, Baca.
Well, Baca is a man who wants to be liked by all. He wants to be liked by the leaders of the L.A. community. He wants to be liked by the civil libertarians. And he wants to be liked by the rank-and-file cops. And that's not possible. And that's what he won't crack down on these on the cops, and he won't give the civil liberties community what it wants, and that's it. You can't be liked. You can't be liked by everybody.
Well, Bill Boyarsky, given your career in journalism here in the state of California, you obviously have the perspective on what happened to this state that used to be the example of higher education in the world. The rest of the world emulated the California school and university system. And over the decades, it has been allowed to atrophy the public universities as a symbol of California have been replaced by California's prison industrial complex.
That's right. That's exactly right. What's happened is, the symbol of California, and it's a symbol unseen by most people, is a prison. And And the only people, only they're only visible like when you're driving down, driving along Highway 5 through the Central Valley. You'll see a sign that leads to that shows that there's a prison, pretty much out of sight.
Correctional facility, it's called.
Correctional facility, as they know.
Not a lot of correcting goes on, from what I understand.
No, it's not, and that's tragic because at one point, when in the state's glory days, when the universities were building and all that, the prisons also had vocational programs. They had a rehabilitative function as much as possible. They were in the 50s and 60s. They were, as far as the prison business around the country goes, considered a sort of enlightened. Two things happened. One was the war on drugs, which just overloaded the prisons with people who, you know, shouldn't be in state prison. And two was the rise of power of the prison guards union, which became this huge force in Sacramento through campaign contributions. And so they became one of the most, and at times the most powerful lobby in the Capitol. And they fought every attempt to reform the prisons and every attempt to monitor behavior of the prison guards and raise their salaries and pensions to exorbitant heights.
So, I guess it's got to be at least some form of embarrassment when you have a Supreme Court justice invoking the Eighth Amendment banning cruel and unusual punishment in a 5-4 opinion. Justice Antonin Kennedy excoriating the state of California, saying just as a prisoner may starve if not fed, he or she may suffer or die if not provided adequate medical care. A prison that deprives prisoners of basic sustenance, including adequate medical care, is incompatible with the concept of human dignity and has no place in civilized society.
I thought that was a powerfully written opinion by Justice Kennedy, who, by the way, is a Californian who, you know, grew up and was educated in California and served as a judge here and understands the system, you know, as an observer and all that, not just some justice sitting, you know, in Washington. It was very powerful, but it shows you what's happened to government in California. The power of these lobbies is so great. The power of this prison guards union is so great that public opinion, or if there is public opinion, doesn't have much impact. And there's another thing that I found out as a journalist. You know, I have a fellowship with this group of justice journalists studying who cover the prison system. That's headed by Joe Dominic over at USC. And I've, you know, learned a lot in my work through that. What I found, and I wrote a piece about this also for Truth Dig, is that the public doesn't care. That's what really is appalling. I mean, it's not that the public doesn't care. The public doesn't have any sympathy. And so what I hear from these journalists, my colleagues in this program, is that it's hard to get their editors interested in stories about the plight of the prison. And their editors say the public doesn't care about the plight of the prisoners. And so you have this whole area of great harm, you know, awful violation of civil liberties, violation of prisoners' rights, and nobody cares. It's very frustrating.
Again, I'm speaking with Bill Boyarsky, a veteran Los Angeles Times reporter and editor. He's a political correspondent for Truthdig and a lecturer in journalism at the USC Annenberg School of Communication. But how does this tie in then? I mean, just a couple of statistics here. 37% of inmates are African-American and 33% are Latinos. African-Americans and Latinos outnumber whites in prison by a margin of almost 2-1. Mm-hmm. Arguably, here in terms of unemployment, millions of mostly minority young men are simply warehoused in this system. What would the real unemployment figures be if but for this warehousing?
If they weren't in prison?
Yeah. I mean, we got the world's biggest prison population.
There's two things. Well, they'd be higher, of course, if they weren't in prison. But what really the real evil here is that these young men, and they're mostly men, are arrested and incarcerated for offenses that are usually drug-related, in that they're in the drug trade or they're in some dispute over their drug dealings or drug-caused offenses. They accumulate these arrests, and under our California's three-strike law, two fairly minor offenses plus a third offense, strike three, can put you in jail for a long, long time. And under the law, it's your second strike or your third strike puts you in jail for a long time. So you have a lot of these people are in there for, long-term incarceration. Now, because the prison system is, as Justice Kennedy pointed out, cool and overloaded, there are no more job training, rehabilitation, getting your general GED degree. Those programs are just being wiped out, as are medical care and all of that. So when a person gets out of prison, he'll find himself ill-trained, psychologically damaged, physically ill, and in this economy where it's hard for anyone to get a job, find himself unemployable. And that's the real tragedy of this, is that we're sentencing a whole generation, now two generations, maybe three, of young or sometimes middle-aged African-American and Latino men to joblessness, even if they want to get a job.
So how cynical is this? Would we rather jail young minority African and American and Latino men than train them? I mean, obviously somebody's making a lot of money off the prison system. The for-profit prison system, I think, is arguably a disgrace.
Well, it is, and it's being increasingly relied upon. I mean, the prison guards are certainly earning a living off of this system. It's to their interest to keep it up. I think that probably the Democratic governor, Jerry Brown, and the Democratic legislators don't approve of this, but they're afraid of the power of the prison guards union. And what I just spoke of, they know that the public is hostile to prisoners. Mm. It's not like, this isn't the civil rights movement here, sure, where you have people marching down the street.
Exactly. No. There is no concern for people in prison. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it really should be all of our responsibility. I thank you so much for, because it is it's a stain on who we are. I thank you for joining us, Bill. We've run out of time.
Thank you for having me. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Again, I've been speaking with Bill Boyarsky, political correspondent for Truthdig and a lecturer in journalism at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication. He was a city editor of the Los Angeles Times and was on the reporting teams that won 3 Pulitzer Prizes. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began talking with Jesse LaGreca, who is calling, we're talking to from Zuccotti Park. He's been active with the Occupy Wall Street movement from the beginning. His confrontation with a Fox producer went viral on the internet, and he was also on the Sunday talk show, ABC's This Week, where he challenged all of those comfortable, smug pundits by saying, I'm probably the first working-class guest you've ever had on your program. We kind of continue that conversation about whether or not the voice of the American working class will emerge in this 99% movement, given that the media basically screens out working class people except for phonies like Joe the Plumber, who John McCain and the Republican establishment try to pretend the Republican Party cares about. So he actually is a very articulate guy, and it was very inspiring to listen to him. And then we spoke with Jeffrey Sachs, who is the director of the Columbia University's Earth Institute and the author of The Price of Civilization, Reawakening American Virtue and Prosperity. He basically walked us through the critical mistakes that Obama made early when the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they were stuck with this massive problem, and that they simply did not show any imagination. They made a bunch of backroom deals. Obviously, Rahm Emanuel, that's his MO. Instead, with this shovel-ready kind of attitude that they had, instead they could have really, according to Jeffrey Sachs, started to reinvent the United States in terms of a new economy, new ways to employ people, and that the imagination deficit is essentially sinking the president and his chances of re-election, although he was very, very adamant saying the alternative is so much worse, that the anti-science, bigoted, ignorant Republicans will take America back to the Dark Ages. And then I spoke with veteran LA Times reporter and editor Bill Boyarsky. He'd been writing a lot about California's cruel prison system. We've had this endless scandal with the sheriff's department, brutality in the prisons, and it took a Supreme Court justice to step in and under the Eighth Amendment, criticize California for its cruel, unusual treatment of prisoners. He pointed out, of course, the sad thing is that nobody ultimately cares about people inside prison. It's not exactly a constituency that tugs at the heartstrings of the average American. But he felt ultimately that the way we treat prisoners and the way we warehouse a whole generation of young minority men in this country is a national shame and has to be addressed. I would like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon, and this program is available at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me there, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. We'll be right back.